Hello, and welcome to the Canyon Home Podcast. I'm your host, Theodore Leaf, and here we talk about all things home, food, life, and style. We've been really focused on the life category recently. I promise you there will be more, but I wanted to talk today about my pivot. I was having coffee with a friend talking about some really great ideas, and she didn't really know my story. And she said, hey, you should really put that out there and put it on the podcast because it's really powerful. So many of us feel terrified to make drastic changes in our lives, and rightfully so. I'll be the first to tell you it's definitely not easy. But I do want to open up this conversation to all of you. So if you have questions about making a pivot, please give us a call on the Homemaker Hotline, which is 312-465-4663, 312-465-HOME. I made a massive, massive pivot when I turned 31, and I'm going to tell you that story in today's episode. I'd like to start this conversation by saying what a pivot means to me. And it's not something as subtle as some of the techniques that we've talked about here, where, you know, we're changing our tone of voice, we're creating a new routine, we are taking things more seriously. We've talked about a lot of different concepts on the most recent episodes, but this is like a full-on lifestyle, career change. And mine happened in many different steps, but I definitely can say that there was one moment where it all clicked. Well, there were actually two coinciding moments now that I'm doing the math. But basically, I was a celebrity hairstylist, and I had a really, really fulfilling career in that field. I got to work with great talent. I was a spokesperson for a wonderful hair care brand. I did television shows, makeover shows, and I was really, really, really excited by that for a long time. And then my husband and I decided to move to New York City. I already had several clients and jobs and things that brought me to New York City, and he was offered a promotion, which was going to move us to New York, pay for everything, and do all of that. And we decided collectively that it was kind of an amazing opportunity. He had lived in New York before, I had not, and we both kind of thought that we would regret it if we didn't take this chance. And as we made moves to make all of that happen, several of my projects kind of finished. I had a contract that didn't renew. I had a project that wrapped up kind of at the same time. And at the time, I was a beauty editor at large for Glamour magazine. And so I was doing that. And it wasn't a crazy amount of time that was needed from me. So I kind of just found myself in New York City, setting up our apartment, kind of nesting as many of us would, right? I was obsessed with the fact that I had to have like Pharaoh and Ball paint on all the walls. And I had to have all my Container Store moments all sorted out so that we didn't feel completely crazy when we were staying in our apartment in New York. And I really jumped in headfirst to that, and then all of a sudden it was done. I was just like, okay, now what? And coincidentally, I had started doing auditions for different shows. My typical thing was makeover shows. And this opportunity came across my desk that was like a lifestyle show. And I kind of was like wishy-washy interested in it until I found out that Kelly Ripa and Mark Consuelos were the executive producers of the show. And I love them. And I was like, well, hello. Yeah, obviously I'll take the audition. And it's always those auditions that you just kind of like aren't really sure about that you end up getting. I don't know why on earth that is just the way it seems to go in the business. But when I went in, they said, you know, what category do you want to focus on? Because I do so many things. And I said, I really want to focus on entertaining because it wasn't something that I had gotten to do on camera much. I had maybe a couple of YouTube videos. I had a Christmas playlist and I had kind of jumped. I had not jumped at all. I kind of like dipped my toe in the water. And then all of a sudden we were in New York and it was very hard to film in that apartment. So I hadn't really done a ton more. And lo and behold, I ended up in the role and I was the entertaining expert. So I was talking to people about throwing parties and hosting dinners and things like that, which was definitely my wheelhouse. And I'll never forget, we had a role on the show, on the crew, called a culinary producer. And her name was Louise, and she's actually a friend of mine now. And we actually have so much in common now, but at the time, her job was to basically prep the food and sort of help work with anything that had food attached to it. And I had never worked with a culinary producer in my life. And we were doing a segment where we were talking about doing like a pizza bar outside. And the couple asked me, oh, for, you know, this steak, do you cut with or against the grain? And I realized, I'm like, I don't know the answer to that. And I asked Louise and she's like, you cut it against the grain and this is why. And I just kind of felt like, ooh, I should know this. And in that moment, I realized that for me to be doing what I wanted to do in the future, I really needed to know more about food because food is really at the heart of entertaining, and entertaining is one of my major, major passions in life. So it definitely got my wheels turning and I felt so sort of in my skin as a hairstylist and a host around makeover shows. And in that moment of being an entertaining expert and feeling like I didn't know enough about food, I felt like I was out of my depth. And I was really nervous about that because with the beauty industry, I had really paid my dues. I went to school, I assisted, I worked really hard, and I really understood my craft. And this is like before YouTube was the thing. So if I wanted to learn how to finger wave hair, I had to figure it out or read a book or something like that. And so things have obviously changed a lot since then. But as I was standing there, I was like, okay, the wheels are turning. And then I ended up doing this project at home just randomly. And I'll give you the like medium short version of this story. I was in San Francisco helping out, I was actually visiting my sister and I was helping out my family with a business that revolved around jam. And I knew nothing about jam and I knew nothing about specialty food, but I did understand marketing and social media and PR. And I had some connections in all of those different fields. And so I figured I could try. And so I was actually out there at the specialty food show. It's called the Fancy Food Show. There's one in San Francisco and one in New York. And I was shopping with my sister at this really cool, oh my gosh, you guys would love it. It is like a vintage kitchen store. Can you imagine? And I found this Maviel jam pan and I just flipped. I just had to have it. And so I'm carrying this jam pan around the city with my sister and I get back and I'm like on my phone researching, like how much did I save? You know, is this hard to find, blah, blah, blah. It's beautiful. It's hammered. It's stunning. Anyway, in the research, this other pan popped up and it was called a Daubier. And it was interesting because I was like, I already have one of these, but I thought it was a fish poacher. And my Nana and Papa had given it to me as a gift for Christmas because they knew I love copper. And it's French copper. It's beautiful. It's tin lined, kind of like a interesting deep oval-ish shape. And I looked at it, I'm like, a DAW-BA, what is that? And so I did some more research and I found out that a DAW-BA is what you make a provincial dish known as a daub in, which is a French dish. And it's very much in the realm of beef bourguignon. It takes like 3 days. You basically marinate it one day, you cook it the next day, and then you let it rest, and then you serve it on the third day. Anybody who knows me knows that is right up my alley. And so when I got back to New York, I found the pan, I cleaned it all up, and I was on a mission. I went to the Chelsea Market, I found two recipes, one was from Food & Wine, one was from Julia Child, and I kind of merged the two together, and I was ready to make this DAW-BA, or sorry, this DAW in the DAW-BA that I had. And I remember we were actually headed up to the Hamptons. It was the winter. Our wonderful friend Robin would let us stay there because she was living in LA. And so I took this whole dish on the train to get back up there or to get there. And I remember, I think it was day two of making the dish, I was cleaning up the kitchen. It had been like a big process of doing this dish. And I kind of just realized in that moment, I said to myself, if you're this obsessed with making this dish and entertaining, you should go to culinary school. And it hit me like a spiritual lightning bolt. It had never really occurred to me. Maybe if like an interviewer said, you know, oh, if you weren't in the beauty industry, what would you do? Maybe I would have answered that, but it just was so not on the forefront of my mind at all. And then I just couldn't think of anything else. I just went nuts with the idea. And I had just finished the first season of that show, and my husband came home and I was like, babe, what if I went to culinary school? And he was just like, oh my gosh, this is too much for me just getting home. And I was like up all night, like texting, you know, chatting online with this culinary school, you know, getting questions answered. Like, how much is it? When is the program? Blah, blah, blah. While Matt was asleep. And then the next day he woke up and he was a little more warm on the idea. And then I just was like, I'm going to go tour this place. And he was so, I just have to like give him props. He was so great. His job was insane at the time, like so demanding. And he took time off to join me on the tour of this culinary school and really get to understand like what the program was, what the place was. Like, is this legit? Is this worth it? What's the story? And I decided to enroll, and I was terrified, but so excited because I just was going with my gut, you know? And what I ended up doing is in between, so I signed up for school, and then we booked a second season of the show. And so the show was called The Secret Guide to Fabulous. It was on the Logo channel. And so I ended up filming the second season. My last day of production was actually my first day of culinary school. So I think culinary school started at like 8:30 or 9 a.m. And I'll never forget, I was in my outfit, in my, you know, chef's coat, my cap, my neckerchief, my houndstooth pants, my clogs, you know, I mean, just very glamorous outfit. And our teacher, Chef Veronica, was screaming at the top of her lungs at 9 a.m. It was terrifying. I thought that I was, you know, walking into like a Sur-La-Table class that was going to be 6 months long. I was very wrong. The culinary school that I went to really prepares people to work in like Michelin star restaurants, like Per Se, French Laundry, 11 Madison Park. Like that's who they're training for. And so the intensity level is on 400. And I'll never forget like walking out of that situation, you know, when I didn't walk out, the day had ended and I was whisked away in a town car. Oh my God, I'm sounding so old. In a car, to finish filming. So I went from this, like being in a uniform and being screamed at, paying lots of money to be screamed at, and then being whisked away into hair and makeup and clothes where, you know, someone, Megan, love her, is, you know, making sure that your pocket square is not wrinkled and that, like, you know, you don't have any lint on you. And there's another person, like, powdering you down and making sure that your skin looks great and your hair's not out of place. It could not have been, you know, could not have picked in more polar opposites of the spectrum in one single day. And after that day of filming, the rest of my 6 months was spent in a uniform. Way more than 6 months, because I ended up doing other things after that that required me to be in a uniform. But it was so interesting because so much of my identity, you know, was kind of wrapped up in showing up in a cute outfit and chit-chatting with people and making people look good and making people feel good. And it was very much, it was an environment of joy and light and beauty. And walking into the intense culinary world of being trained as a French chef at the International Culinary Center, it could not have been more opposite. It is not. Nobody cares. You're all wearing the same outfit, first of all. So there's no showing up in, you know, a cute new belt and saying, like, oh, where'd you get that? You look so great. Oh, my gosh. How was your weekend? Blah, blah, blah. There was none of that. No chit-chat. It was not lighthearted. It was very much business. Nobody cares how charming you are. They care how straight the onions are you cut, or that you didn't burn something, or you didn't catch something on fire, or that your souffle rose. Like, it's very, very different. And my ego definitely took a massive hit in that moment, because I was just like, oh, this is like a completely different world, and it's not about anything that I'm used to. But little by little, I kind of got into the groove, and I realized, like, wow, this is actually kind of great. Like, it's kind of meditative to stand here and prep vegetables and prep meat and learn French and culinary French, and, you know, have to do math again and have to make flashcards again. And it really was an interesting kind of pivot, for sure. As far as just what I was used to, my day-to-day, the works. I mean, I would come home and I would actually cook whatever we cooked at the school. And Matt was cracking up because he's like, oh my gosh, you really must love this if you're cooking all day at school, coming home and cooking. And I was also volunteering at the James Beard Foundation, which, if you're not familiar, it's a really, really great foundation. And they host chef dinners in the James Beard House. James Beard was a very well-known author, personality, commentator, friends with Julia Child, major, 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 major person in the culinary world. And I would volunteer there. I would volunteer for charity events. And the first charity event that I volunteered for, I was, you know, in my chef's whites with my knife roll ready to go. And they had two different restaurants that kind of dropped out or didn't show up or something. And so they had a surplus of assistance and not enough things to do. And so they asked me to check people in for the event. It was called the Lobster Rumble. And they asked me to download an app on my phone and check people in. And I remember I was like, oh my God, like, what if Kelly Ripa is at this event? Like, what if I'm being, you know, what if someone I know sees me, like, volunteering, checking people in? And I really had a freak out. I really had a moment. And I was like, you know what? At the end of the day, if I see someone I know, I'm going to stand here proudly as doing me. Like, I'm in my element, I'm following my gut, I'm paying my dues, I'm in culinary school, I'm expanding my horizons, and I'm doing everything I can to learn. And I put my smile on my face, I downloaded the app, and I checked in people, and it was so funny, because there were just so many, like, entitled people that had bought tickets, and they're like, who are you? And I'm like, honey, I'm just here to give you your wristband, it's all good. And I was lovely and helpful, and I ended up, after checking everybody in, I did end up getting to assist some chefs, and actually met someone who owns Hudson Valley Farms, and it ended up being a great experience. But it was just one of those examples of, like, not letting your ego get in your way and just following your gut and doing the work and not worrying about what other people think. And we have talked about this in many different ways here on the podcast. So many of us that identify as homemakers and people that love to create beauty and food and friendships and moments in the home feel, you know, the need to kind of worry about what everybody else thinks. And as we kind of progress and build our own community and connect with each other, we get stronger in that. And for me with this, I just had to really lean into my intuition and just do it. And I really, really, really cannot tell you how much it's changed my life, because it just, I took such a risk. I worked so hard. I scrubbed floors. I scrubbed refrigerators. I worked at 4 a.m. for $10 an hour at Bouchon in New York City. I took trains. I took bicycles. I took jitneys. I did so many different things to make those experiences happen and to really back it up when I say yes to every learning opportunity. And I'm here to tell you that if you're having this like itch or scratch to explore a pivot, it's probably what you're supposed to do. It might not look the way that you think it will when it's in front of you, but we are creatures of change, regardless if we like it or not. One of my favorite quotes is, "No growth comes within your comfort zone." And I think it was a hairstylist, Melissa, who said that to me the first time. And it was something that has stayed with me personally my entire life. And it is just so true. There's so much more possible than we'll ever understand. And we have so much more control in that than I think we give ourselves credit for. And, you know, for me, it was just really kind of getting quiet and having that moment where I realized, wow, I think this is the move for me. This is the next step. And really paying attention to that, exploring it, giving it the time that it deserved, researching, checking it out, kind of, you know, checking out the field, and then pressing play and saying, you know what, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is, literally, and jump in feet first. And the reason that I felt so called to go to culinary school and get trained was because I really did see myself closer to where I am now, where I'm able to teach and share and inspire. And for me, for all of you to follow me and you know, trust my advice, I had to know more. I had to be worth it. And there are so many incredibly talented people out there that aren't quote unquote professionally trained. Martha Stewart, Ina Garten. There are so many people out there that are so gifted and entertaining at home that didn't necessarily go to culinary school. You know, Martha had her own catering company. Ina had the Barefoot Contessa. We all have our own way of getting there. But I think that the through line is the respect for the craft and the passion for the work. And for me, at the time that I was ready to make that leap, I decided that the culinary school way was going to be the best thing for me. And it really, really was. And I will say that at the end of it, you take it so seriously that I kind of had to find like another balance and bring a little bit of the lighthearted joy back to my food, because I really did just want things to be so perfect, so French, so high end. Now I really am so grateful because so many of those techniques are just in my hands now. And I look at a recipe and it makes sense. And I really understand the techniques behind things. And that way, when I come up with a new idea and I want a certain texture, I want a certain flavor, I want a certain color, I know how to get there. Or at least I have a much better idea of what to try to get where I want to be. And that is priceless. And I would never be there without spending the time and the effort and the money to go to culinary school and really honor that part of my gut that was saying, this is your path and this is something that you should do. And I'm sharing this story because my friend Jen was so, I guess, surprised to hear the whole thing and thought that it might inspire some of you, not necessarily to go to culinary school or anything like that, but just to not be afraid of that change. And it's never over. It is something that I, you know, have to focus on every single day, and I'm always looking at new cookbooks or researching new ideas or old ideas and bringing them into the 21st century. And I will say that it has not been the easiest thing in the world. There were definitely times where I felt like, did I make the right decision? Why would I walk away from a successful career I had put so much into? And I stayed the course. And after culinary school, I was so lucky that I ended up getting asked to be on the Martha Bakes show on PBS. And one of my goals when I started culinary school was to be good enough to cook with Martha. And then all of a sudden I got the call to be a guest on the show. And it was definitely amazing. And she was my everything and did not disappoint. She is a talent that is second to none. And she was so great with us and just such a joy. And it was actually filmed at her house. And it was, you guys, it was better than we could ever imagine. It just, the whole thing, I was on a cloud. I always joke when I teach cooking classes that I died that day. And so a ghost is teaching your cooking class. And I really do feel like that sometimes because I jumped in feet first, and that one of that glimmer, that surprise, that opportunity really was like a point in the right direction saying like you did the right thing. And it's those little glimmers that kind of keep us all going. And I'm not saying that everybody's going to get that opportunity, but it might even be just, hey, I want to get better at pie crust and I'm going to try this technique several times until it feels right and bakes right and is something that I can count on. And I just want to encourage all of you to just stay the course because you never know what's around the corner. And we don't know that what we're doing now is what we're always going to be doing. And there's just so much to that. Since the pandemic, my career has changed drastically. I was teaching cooking classes in person. I was doing cooking classes on my own, my YouTube channel, all that stuff. And then, you know, since the world has kind of, you know, reopened again, I'm doing culinary production and food styling and recipe development and also this podcast, and I'm doing my YouTube channel as well and the website. And there are so many different things that I'm doing now that even a year or two ago, I didn't even occur to me. To be honest, I really didn't get the right recipe writing thing until I was forced to do it for work a lot. And then I was like, oh, okay, I'm in my groove. I get this now. And what was so great is everything that I did in the past added up to helping me get it right when I'm writing a recipe. And I'm thinking about the people in my cooking classes that had questions and really trying to bring light to the dark corners of a recipe so that you're not sort of left holding the bag and confused. And all of those experiences add up to what I'm doing now, what I'll do tomorrow, and who knows what the future holds. So if you are thinking about making a pivot, I highly encourage you to research it and get as much information as you can and visit places and really, really look at it from every single angle so that when you do decide to make whatever decision you make, you did give it the time that it deserved. There are so many people out there, and I know so many of you listening probably feel this way, where it's been in the back of your mind, but you're really not sure. Just take the step to find out more. And whether you go with it or not, at least you will know, and knowledge is power. And I feel like the stories that we can make up in our mind are much different than the actual reality when we spend the time to research and get all the facts and the information in front of us. And I just hope that this inspires you to take that next step, whatever it is. And if you're listening and you don't have a pivot in you, but you're just feeling great where you are, I am raising my hand to you as well and saying, yes, absolutely, do you. But I wanted to share this story because it's definitely been obviously life-changing for me, and it hasn't been all roses and butterflies and moonbeams as I shared, but as I sit here and think about all of you and this community that we've built and being true to myself and my passions and my love, I really, really am grateful that I did make those hard decisions to switch things up, try new things, and sort of jump into the next thing. So I really appreciate you all listening. Thank you so, so much. We're getting new ratings every day. If you like this podcast episode, the best thing that you can do is to share it with a friend that you think will like it. That is my big ask. And if you also would like to rate and leave a review, we would be so, so grateful. Again, if you have any thoughts about a pivot, or if you have any questions about anything that we just brought up, it's just me, give me a call at 312-465-HOME. That's 312-465-4663. The Homemaker Hotline is alive and well, and we would love to hear from you. I also have a really exciting episode coming up where we're going to talk about family events with one of my favorite people, Jesse. So if you have any questions about sort of upcoming family holiday events and all the hoopla that can occur around that, also call the hotline with those questions, because we are going to dive into those hotline voicemails on that chat as well. So I look forward to talking to you all next week, and thanks so much for listening. Bye.